Okay, so it's been a little while since I've had him on the podcast, but I'm really, really pleased to have someone that I admire very much and respect very, very highly. Now an international coach. Last time I spoke to him, he was with FFC Frankfurt. Now he is the manager of the Republic of Ireland. I'm joined by head coach Colin Bell. Colin, been a little while. How are you doing?
Yeah, Kieran, yeah, I'm fine. I hope you're fine too. I'm obviously going to enjoy talking to you again after such a long time. And I think we'll have a lot to talk about.
We will. As I said in the intro, obviously last time we spoke, you were a club coach. You're now manager of the Republic of Ireland. We're speaking a day after the final FIFA rankings came out and the Republic of Ireland have risen to 29th. I think I read that they were the highest climbers in terms of points scored in the latest rankings. I should really get your views on that. I mean, I know some people question the FIFA rankings, but it's positive reading for Ireland, isn't it? And I guess a culmination of what's been a pretty good 10 months in charge so far.
Yes, for us, it's obviously very positive that we are moving in the right direction. We want to, you know, keep progressing and improving on the way we approach things on and off the pitch. And again, it's a results game. We know that. So it's important that we are, you know, making that progress, not just the way we set up, but also that we're able to get results. And it's still a long way to go, which is, you know, when you look at the FIFA world rank list, that we are still then loads and loads of spaces to move onto or into. So that's also a positive. But yeah, I was very pleased when I read the ratings yesterday.
I mentioned 10 months in charge, took on the role back in February. We spoke just before the recording. It was a big ambition of yours, wasn't it, to take on the role of an international team? I think it was written into your previous contracts when you were working in clubs that if an international team came in, you wanted to have the opportunity to at least speak to them. How have you found it in that first 10 months of Ireland? Has it been everything that you expected it to be?
I think it's been more, to be honest with you, Kieran. I've really, really enjoyed every moment of it. And yes, the ambition was always there to get as high as possible. If I was going to stay in the women's game, to try and get a higher position or move forward and try and help develop things at a different level. Because I also see the women's game is really coming on and it is developing. And of course, you can do your bits. And then that's really important that all the club coaches that are out there are working tremendously hard to improve the level and the standard of play every single day. As a national team coach, I can then build off that and try to improve structures in and around that. So, yeah, it was a big ambition. And also, of course, for me as a coach, an ambition to be able to play a World Cup qualifier, to play a European Championship qualifier, maybe even get into the tournament itself. So there's a lot of things that I was looking into, and I was really, really proud and very, very pleased when the Republic of Ireland job came up and I was able then to get it. And like I say, I've loved every single minute of it so far.
What's the main transition that you had to make from club to country? What are the major differences that you noticed very early on?
Of course, I don't have the girls around me every single day. I'm not on the training pitch every single day. So that was a big difference. But I was prepared for that. I've been in coaching now for a long, long time and experienced all different levels of football. And I think it was just now for me the time where I could just also try and put that knowledge into different areas. And so I'm not on the pitch every day, but I'm in office every day. I'm talking to people, I'm organizing things, which again is a new aspect for me to progress and to improve. I've got a lot of great people working around me and alongside me at the FAI, where I've learned so much the last few months. So that's been a progression for me. It's not as though you think you're now at the highest you can get, and that's it. I want to keep improving because I still have that desire to keep learning, and I know I have to learn a lot But that did, that was one of the differences, of course, not being on the pitch every day, not having a game every weekend. But honestly, Kieran, I was looking forward to that, not having to play every single weekend, but have those moments where you have one game in a FIFA window and it's all the preparation just for this one match, which I've always enjoyed. That's why I always enjoyed the cup competitions, you know, whatever level that was at. You know, when you really focus on just that one match, if you win, you're through. If you lose, you're out. So I've always relished these kind of scenarios. And but like I say, you know, I'm learning every single day. But what we have instilled now in Ireland is that I can get the home base players in once a week to our FAI HQ at Abbottstown. So I am seeing the players then on a regular basis, which is, again, a massive jump for the Republic of Ireland.
And how are you coping with kind of monitoring those players that maybe aren't based in Ireland? You've got, you know, a real yeah, quality squad available to you. I think you look at the likes of Denise O'Sullivan, had a very good year in North Carolina in the NWSL. You've got Diane Caldwell, who you will know well from the time that you had at SC Sand in Germany. Megan Campbell, I know, is injured at the moment, but playing for Manchester City. You've got players spread out around the world. How do you go about trying to monitor those players and keep tabs on how they're getting on?
Yeah, I was over in Manchester a few weeks ago and saw Megan and Marie Hurrian, our goalkeeper, in their home match against Bristol City. And unfortunately, then it was a few days later when the return match in the Champions League against Lillestrøm was then due to be played, where Megan, unfortunately, then got this really serious injury. So that would be the process, really. I'll be travelling around, visiting the players, visiting the girls in their own environment, watching matches, you know, looking at the standard. And Denise has had a fantastic season. We're in touch basically almost every week on the telephone. But I can also, via internet, you know, watch the matches that she's playing in. So, you know, she had a tough season with her place, you know, starting well at Houston Dash and then being out of the team, only getting on for 3 or 4 minutes, and then this crucial move for her then to North Carolina, where she was then a regular and played very well and got through to the playoff final. So she had a fantastic end of a very difficult season. But Denise is one of my top players, and you know, she really does symbolise what we're trying to you know, get together in Ireland, that passion, that energy, positive, great little player. So we're trying to, you know, monitor the girls, and that's what I'll be doing after Christmas. Again, you know, going to England, watching the matches. I'll be going to see Diane tomorrow, in actual fact. You know, so we're keeping in touch all the time, and obviously there'll also be a trip then coming up in the next few months to France to see Niamh Fahey, who's now playing at Bordeaux, and Niamh has had a very good season so far. And so there's going to be a lot of travelling involved, but I think it's important for the girls that, you know, that I do turn up and have that that close contact, and not just over the internet.
I read a quote in the Irish media, I think it was shortly after you'd taken the role on, that, you know, there's part of you that would like players to be playing in a domestic league so that they can raise the profile and improve the standard. But I'm going to assume that you see huge benefits to these players playing, as you mentioned, Niamh Fahey in France. You've got Louise Quinn over here as well in England with Arsenal. Yeah. I guess the exposure to these different leagues is going to benefit the national team, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. I think we need to, you know, be on both areas very active. The girls that are playing professionally, you just spoke Louise, we've got Katie McCabe, plus the other girls I've already mentioned. So they're all, you know, getting some good coaching, playing a good good level of football. That's helping us. But I can't obviously say to all the Irish-based players, you have to go abroad. If somebody wants to go abroad, that's their own decision that they'll make. But we can try and improve the actual system that we have in place at the moment in the Republic of Ireland at league level, which means that the girls that are elite players, they will in future have to have more training sessions, football sessions on the pitch. And we can't also, I know I'm obviously, you know, realizing that I can't demand from the clubs that they're having to train 5 or 6 times a week. It might not be possible through whatever reasons, financial or whatever, but I expect my players my elite players to be getting those 4 or 5 football sessions in a week, plus then their matches. So we're working on it at the moment, and we'll have a workshop with all the clubs coming up in February, then in the new year, to engage with each other about this process. But we want to improve our players individually, and I'm just, you know, the theory behind it is that then the league itself will improve. So maybe at times, you know, some of these girls are now playing abroad, will have then at some stage in their career the desire to come back and invest a little bit more than in the league itself. So we have to try and get things stronger domestically. But again, we need those players playing abroad, of course, at the moment to be on the highest level possible. And maybe just one quick example from the last Euros in the summer. If you look at the Austrian team that got through to the semi-final, their starting 11, all of them play in the Bundesliga in Germany. So that shows what can happen if the girls are playing at the highest level. But it doesn't mean to say we want to neglect our own league. So there's a lot to do.
Absolutely, absolutely. I don't like to pick out individuals too much, but as you'll know, Women's Soccer Zone has a fairly decent US following and American listeners. Megan Connolly is a player in the college system playing for Florida State University that's getting a lot of attention over there. I don't know how much time you've had to work with her. I know she has to combine, obviously, international duty with her studies, but a lot of talk about her. She was someone that was earmarked very early on in her career over there. Is that someone that you look at? You talked about that future of the team. Is she someone that you see who can have a really good time and a future in this Ireland setup?
Megan has been in almost all of the camps leading up until the World Cup campaign. And unfortunately, then through the studies, she would have theoretically been available for the Northern Ireland camp, but she wouldn't have been available then for Slovakia and the Dutch camp. So I just said, listen, if you can't do all three, then you're not going to be in any. So, you know, she can just concentrate then on her studies and on her college football. This is a problem, to be honest with you. Megan is a very talented young lady, and I'd, you know, love to get her back into the setup, but she needs to be playing then regular football. And obviously her studies are very important for her. So she's set that priority to start off with, which is important, of course, for her and the rest of her life. So, you know, she's setting herself up now for a future. But as soon as she gets her studies through, and she's through with them, I think, quite shortly, and hopefully then she'll be moving into, in America, then into the professional league. And then obviously we'll get Megan back in. But we have contact. She's obviously still part of the squad and part of my plans for the future. But I need her to be playing a regular football. I need her to be obviously training at a regular regular training sessions at the highest level possible. So we're just giving her that time that she needs. But, you know, she'll definitely remain in our plans.
Well, let's have a look at kind of what's happened over the last 10 months in terms of your time with Ireland. I mean, it wasn't the easiest start, was it? Because there was a very high profile dispute that kind of escalated between the players and the FAI. They called their own press conference and made it very clear that they were unhappy with some of the conditions that they were playing under, and kind of revealed that they weren't necessarily being compensated enough that kind of to justify representing their country. I'm not going to ask you to go over old ground, but that will have been new for you as a head coach. I'm just kind of interested to know how you dealt with that and how you kind of kept your distance while trying to support the players, but also how that scenario has maybe brought the team and the squad closer together.
Yeah, obviously it was, for me, it was a difficult situation to come into. I didn't really know that much about it, and didn't expect it to be such a high profile situation, and it obviously developed into that after a few weeks. But I said at that time, when it all happened, my position was to try and bring both parties together. And I also said this openly, that the girls definitely took care of me during that phase, but also the FAI took great care of me and protected me. So I was getting the protection actually from both parties, which was fantastic to experience, the way the players addressed it and the way my bosses addressed it. And my aim was then just to bring everybody together and try to find a solution, which they eventually did. And But it also, for me now, in hindsight, was able, I was able then to really show the players that I'm setting the stalls really high. So the standards are going to be very, very high for them to achieve. They stuck together. They worked things out with the FAI. So now they've got very good conditions. So they're happy. We're always looking to improve, of course. It's not as though that you get complacent or like the job's done. So we're always looking to improve. But I'm also then able now to set the standards maybe even higher than they've experienced in the past. And that's where we're at. So it was, in actual fact, a very good result for both parties. We can discuss, you know, various things that were said in and around from third parties, whether that was positive or not. But I don't want to go into that topic now, because it is, for us, it's a thing that's, you know, like, it's been done. So to be honest with you, Kieran, I don't even think about that anymore. You know, we've moved on. The girls are progressing. They're bought into what we're trying to do. You know, everybody's, I think the biggest achievement was then to bring everybody together. And that's happened. When that's a great result.
Absolutely. And I look at the results since then, and I mentioned earlier about it bringing the team together, and you've just mentioned it there. I think there was a fear that the game, I think it was at the beginning of April against Slovakia, might not happen. And obviously that did go ahead. They won that game. There's only been one defeat in that time since that game through to where we are now, and that came away in Scotland. And I look at, you know, a home draw against Iceland, a team that are very highly respected. They obviously went to the Euros very soon after that game, and yes, they didn't perform to the level that we know they can, but we know that Iceland have their qualities. You've started your World Cup qualifying really well, and I want to talk about the most recent game, because, I mean, phenomenal result away in the Netherlands. But how have you found the kind of the World Cup qualifying aspects, because you're used to high level competition. You've won the Champions League with FFC Frankfurt. You've performed in the Bundesliga. International World Cup qualifiers, how are they different to maybe what you've experienced in the past?
Well, maybe just before I answer that, we look back, like you just said, a few of the results that we've had. I'll always take the Scotland results out a little bit myself personally, because we played Scotland in a phase where all my players were on holiday. They'd already, like, the season was off. They'd been on holiday, the majority of them, for about 4 or 5 weeks. And this fixture was really, like, set up long before I was head coach. So, to be honest with you, if I'd have had anything to say on that, I would never have played it, because it was just like an uneven contest. The Scotland team were well prepared and preparing for the Euros, and we came in as a little bit of a sparring partner for them. So I wasn't happy about that, really, to be honest with you. But we, in actual fact, conceded a goal in the 88th minute. So I was really annoyed about it, because, again, we should never have lost that game. But it was a game where I was able then to show the players the desire that we always need. Even though we only had a short preparation, we should have got a result out of that game. And it is an international match. And the players were maybe afterwards, okay, you know, it's a friendly match. We've played it now. And the atmosphere was a little bit, I wouldn't say laissez-faire afterwards, but it was a little bit casual. And I just said, no, I won't accept that. You know, we want to set standards high. So every international match we play, even if we have preparation or not, we want to get a result out of it. So that learning effect from the Scotland game was very important for us. And then we went into the World Cup campaign, starting with Northern Ireland. And you can't really get closer than Northern Ireland against Republic of Ireland. So there's a lot of, that's not a normal match to play, Kieran. You know, through the history, of course, of the football history, the history, the political history of both countries. So we knew this is going to be a really tough match. And the preparation was very, very intense, and we were well prepared. But to actually, for me personally, then to experience those few moments leading up to the match, and then, the whistle blows and we kick off, and that atmosphere in that kind of environment. On that evening, there was no national anthems being played. So there's a lot of stuff going on around and not, around the game. but it didn't affect us at all. And the girls put in a tremendous performance. And, you know, to get that feeling of actually now participating in a World Cup, for me personally, it was fantastic. And I'm just trying to project that kind of, that kind of feeling and that kind of passion then into the girls, that every game, and especially a World Cup qualifying game, is something really, really special. I would have, as a player, loved to have been able to represent England. I wasn't good enough to do that, but I would have walked to Wembley Stadium if I'd have been asked. So that's the kind of feeling I want to establish in the team. But also, we have to think football, so we're trying to think and find a way to win our matches with the facilities and the type of players, with their strengths and weaknesses that we have. But it is a fantastic feeling to be out there competing against the best.
And I should apologise to you and to those that are listening, because I did skip over quite an important part of your early tenure, which was actually the Cyprus Cup, because that will have been the first opportunity that you had to kind of evaluate your players and see exactly what you had available to you. And actually, it was a really good competition for you, wasn't it? Because you got a couple of wins against the Czech Republic and against Wales, a draw against Hungary, and you know, a 2-0 defeat against Korea DPR. Yes, it goes down as a defeat, but we know how good the Korean teams are, both of them. And both very, very high on possession, very good with the ball. What kind of an education was that game in particular for your players? Because we've seen Asian sides, Japan, I'd throw into the mix as well, China, very good in possession, can frustrate opposition teams because they don't give the ball away very often. Yeah. That game in particular, I know you lost it, but how important an education was that for your players?
I think the whole, for me personally, coming into the Cyprus Cup was a great education about the girls. And it was a tournament that was so set up that we couldn't have won the tournament, even if we'd won all four matches. Because we were in three groups of four, and we were in Group C. So the winner of Group A plays the winner of Group B in the final. And we were in Group C, which we actually won. So the highest placing we could have actually reached would have been third. And then we played off then that third, fourth playoff position against North Korea. And in actual fact, we had really some good chances to take the lead in that game. And we unfortunately lost through a free kick about 12 minutes before the end, and which was a personal individual mistake. And then we opened up and tried to get the equaliser. And then we were just like, accounted for the second goal just a couple of minutes before the end of the game. But it really was a fantastic game because I played basically the previous matches with the same team. That was a lesson for me to see that we didn't have the strength in depth of the squad at that moment of time. A lot of players came into the Cyprus Cup not really fit and fit enough for international football, which was an eye-opener. So I basically played all four matches with the same team, which was a massive ask on the girls. But they took it really, really well. And the game against Korea, yes, we learned a lot because they do play some fantastic football. But we frustrated them for long, long periods of the game. In actual fact, at that time, their coach made two substitutions after 20 minutes because he couldn't break us down. So that really was, for me, a fantastic start and a great way to really, you know, to get things moving, get things going. But also, again, to look at the style of play that other countries have adapted over the years and what we have to aim for. And we need, of course, good passing, good possession. And we're not there. We're not there by a long chalk at the moment. But that's the kind of football, obviously, that I want the girls to be playing.
Yeah. And I think that again, was an early indicator as to, as you say, maybe don't have the numbers, but that there is quality there. Let's fast forward. I wanted to kind of cover that off because I think it was really important to kind of give an insight into the early time and what you had initially ahead of you. We mentioned World Cup qualifiers. You talked about 2-0 away in Northern Ireland. You then followed that up with a good 2-0 win in Slovakia. But without question, the big result of World Cup qualifying came in your last fixture at the end of November. You went to European champions, the Netherlands, and you got a very, very, very good 0-0 draw. Now, you don't have an easy group. You've got the Netherlands, you've got Norway as well, who, yes, we know they had a disappointing Euros, but even without Ada Hegerberg, we know the qualities that Norway have and on any given day can match up with the best teams in the world. But that draw in the Netherlands really, I think, brought people's attention onto the Republic of Ireland, because not only was it a draw, it was a draw away from home in front of a 12,000 sellout crowd, but with the attacking talent that the Netherlands have, and we saw that in abundance during the Euros, a clean sheet was almost even more impressive. I want to talk to you about that game, because what were your thoughts going into that one initially? Because we know how good the Netherlands have been. They've continued that form after the tournament. You approach that game. How do you approach it? What's the thoughts that are going through your head?
Yeah, like you say, we have a very tough group. I think, you know, just to reflect on that shortly before I answer your actual question, I think Northern Ireland and Slovakia, excuse me, and ourselves, we're very similar. We're almost on the same level, I would say. So those are the games that are really, really tight for us. On a good day, we can obviously beat them, which we have done. On a lesser good day, you can actually slip up against both of them because they have good players in their team. So they were really, really important matches that we kept our plan. We kept things tight and then took our chances very well, which is obviously important. But coming up into the preparation for the Netherlands, I was after the draw had been made. Then last April, we knew then that it's Norway, Holland are the top seeds. And so obviously went to the Euros and I was able to analyse both countries very closely. I watched, I think, all of the Dutch games live. And it was a fantastic performance from this team. So going into that game thinking, okay, we don't have much of a chance, but we still have a possibility, excuse me, if we do the things well and do things right. And one of the things that you have to do is to keep things really, really tight and compact. Yes, they'll still be able to create chances, but we don't. If you open up against the Netherlands and give them that space that they need, especially in the wide areas or in the half spaces, they'll just tear you apart. And so that was the strategy, really, just to keep things tight, get behind the ball with as many people as possible, but close those areas and try and keep the game in front of us if possible and not let them get in behind because they're just too dangerous. And that was the plan. And of course, you know, it looks all good in the theory and on the training pitch, but when you're actually up against this team, then it obviously becomes really clear how good they actually are. And Serena has done a fantastic job at Holland and in Holland with this team. And they are, for me at the moment, playing without doubt the best football in women's football worldwide. So although you can't see it on the FIFA world rank list at the moment, I would say they are the best team in the world at the moment.
Really? You think they're not only playing the best football, you think they're the best team in the world as well?
Yeah, I honestly, at the moment, their level of play and their organisation, the talent that they have within that team, I think they'll be very, very difficult to stop. So they've made, you know, like fantastic progress. So we knew that we were up against that, plus then a 12,500 crowd. And, you know, it's about having a plan that you stick to. You need a little bit of luck, which we had maybe in two situations. But after analysing the game again, Kieran, we should. And I don't want to be too critical with my girls, but we went through it. We should have scored a goal against them because we had four fantastic counter-attack chances. And unfortunately, we weren't able to take. But again, I said after the game, I don't want to get greedy because, you know, we did have to hang on in various situations with everything we've got. So it was a fantastic result. And yes, it put us into the limelight a little bit, off the back of their popularity. So we could use the Dutch popularity for ourselves a little bit. You know, obviously we know how good they are, and if we can repeat that performance again when they come to Ireland, that would be fantastic. But it is more likely that they can obviously beat us than we can beat them. But You know, you never give a game up before it's been played, as far as I'm concerned. I don't want to reveal too many secrets because, again, we have to play against them in Ireland. But one thing I do know is the Dutch are obviously so professional and so good that they'll be studying very intensely because they obviously need to find ways and means to break it down if other teams set up like that. So it was a fantastic experience for us. And we got a point, which nobody really expected us to get. But we keep our feet firmly on the ground and know that we still have to do a lot of work. But we are taking, in actual fact, the Dutch as our role model, the way they approach things, and the way they are playing football. That's how I think women's football should be progressing in those kind of areas. So, all credit to the Dutch, actually, for the way they're approaching things at the moment.
I know you will want to absolutely focus on your team and your players, but I've got to ask, Jackie Gronin is a player that you will know from the time that you had with her at Frankfurt. I wouldn't ask if you're surprised by how she's developed and how she's arguably become one of the best midfielders in Europe, if not the world, but how impressed are you with how she's kicked her game on and really kind of showed what her qualities were in that European Championships?
I'm very proud, actually. And we're in constant contact during the Euros. Like I say, I was in Holland for the 3 weeks. And we were texting before every match and after every match that she was playing in. And I was just so proud and to be able to know that, I've had a little bit of influence on her approach and on her game and took that step to get her into Frankfurt when she wasn't a regular in the Chelsea team. And I even had people telling me at the club before I signed her for Frankfurt, basically asking, why do you want to sign a player that's not playing on a regular basis in a league that's not at the moment as strong as the Bundesliga? And so I was very pleased, that after the first game she played in Frankfurt that time, she was on the bench, came on, second game she was in, and since then she's been in all the time. But her progress in the Dutch team has been phenomenal, and it really just sums up Jackie's character, that she works very hard at her game, she never gives up, she's always looking for new ways to improve and looking for those solutions and the opportunities to improve. And I thought, in actual fact, that she was one of the best players during the Euros, for sure. So I can only sum it up to say that I'm really proud of Jackie and just hope that she can continue progressing the way she is.
And going back to the game against the Netherlands, probably my final question on it. You talked about kind of tactically and setting those players up in the right way to deal with that Netherlands threat. It's one way to set them up tactically and set them up in a way that you want to have them play. But mentally and psychologically, how do you prepare players when they are coming up against the European champions who have shown over the last few months how dominant they can be?
You did a lot of stuff off the pitch, of course. A lot of talking, a lot of analysis in little groups, in a little bit larger groups, in twos, in individual talks. And also, all the things that we studied of the game that we'd then try and put into practice in our sessions, in smaller sized games, to get the pressure that they put on and that you don't have that time. And then obviously looking at the side of 11 against 11, setting them up in this kind of way. But yes, it's instilling that belief that you can actually get something out of it. But I said to the girls, if you have a belief system, you have to define why and give reasons and good reasons why you believe something. So, we went through all the aspects of the Dutch game and also the strengths and weaknesses of our own game and tried to, find as many arguments as we could together why we should actually think we could have a chance of getting a result against them. So it's not just like, oh, let's have the Irish passion and desire and try and do our best. No, we have to deliver reasons that we think we can. And then obviously have a strategy. That could be one of the reasons why. If you do this, if we do that, they'll be forced to do this and do that. So it was always asking questions, basically, and trying to find a solution for every scenario. And you don't always get it right, of course, but if somebody does make and if the players around them, in and around them, in that vicinity, can get it right and you know, correct that mistake. So the communication on the pitch, verbally and non-verbally, was going to be really important in that kind of environment. And then you need that moment of where you get a little bit of luck when Miedema hits the post, instead of it going inside the post and going into the net, it hit the outside of the post and went out. But I believe in the whole game, that was the only situation in the game that we had a little bit of luck, to be honest with you. Yes, there was a debate at the end about a handball from Diane Caldwell, that the referee might have been able to give a penalty. Seeing it a few times, that would have been a really, really hard a call to give that penalty against us, because Diane is not active going to the ball. She's jumped up, her arm is in the air, which is a natural movement, and the ball takes a deflection and hits her. And the referee did very, very well in that environment to keep cool and play on. And it was definitely the right decision. So, yeah, a lot of things that you have to look at. And but you still, that's what I said to the girls, just to finish it off, Kieran. If we get everything as well or do as well as we can in everything, every aspect that we're trying to get right, you still don't have a guarantee that you're going to get a result, of course. That's football. So you need that courage before you even start to invest in something that you don't know if it's going to work or not. But like I said, if you get good arguments and good reasons why, then that does increase that belief system and makes it stronger. And that's what we try to do.
Yeah, fantastic result, and credit to both you and your players for being able to maintain that Netherlands team. I should try and look to wrap this one up, but we should look ahead. Ireland not at the moment announced for any friendly competition at the start of the year, not in the Cyprus Cup, not in the Algarve Cup. Looking at your fixtures, the next one that I see is not until April, which is a World Cup qualifier against Slovakia. Is there plans to try and arrange some friendlies between the new year and World Cup qualifiers starting up again?
Yeah, our plan is all clear. We're going to Portugal in January, playing two matches against Portugal. And then in the end of February, March camp, instead of going to play these tournaments where you're playing four matches in a week, and you know, you're really having to push the players tremendously hard, they're also coming into the camps after playing league matches. They'll go back to their clubs after these tournaments and play league matches. I just didn't think it was the wisest thing to do. So we'll be doing a 10-day camp in Ireland, training every single day, preparing ourselves. I just think the team now at this stage need more training time. It's a great, of course, yeah, I mean, I would say great. If you have like 25 top players like Germany or Holland or whoever, France, then you can, you know, play these tournaments and you can give, you know, this all the players a game or two. But we don't have that that strength in depth at the moment, although our team is getting younger, and we have some really good, talented young players coming through. So I just believe it's wiser for us to use that March camp to be training every single day, maybe even doing double sessions and working on our tactical play, working on our football. And we would definitely play a match in that camp. We're just not sure against who we're going to be playing. But so we have Portugal for sure. And then we'll have this 10-day very intensive trainings camp. And then we'll be prepared as well as we can be for Slovakia and for Holland that are coming up then in April.
Yeah, and it will be your first home games in the qualifiers as well. It's kind of the fixtures have fallen quite strangely, haven't they? You've had three away games to start the qualification. You sit on 7 points after those three games that we discussed. Yeah. How much are you looking forward to having some games in front of your home crowd? As you said, you've got Slovakia and Netherlands in the April international window, and then in June you welcome Norway as well. So some really exciting fixtures coming up, isn't it?
Yeah, well, when the draw was made in Nyon back in the end of April, all the countries then get together after the draw and try and work out together the fixtures. And this is a very, quite a strange process, to be honest with you. We were able to, you know, like negotiate. So we knew that we were taking three away matches on. It wasn't as though we were forced into anything. It was just the way, you know, the negotiations went. So it was definitely a new process, a new learning process for me, how that actually works. It's not as though that UEFA then say, okay, this is the draw's been made, this is the group, and these are the fixtures that you have to play. It's the countries that negotiate themselves. So, like I say, that can be debated if that's good or bad, but it is the way it is. So, you know, we took that on board. Now we have a totally new situation coming up that we have two matches then in a window. Just to make that point clear, Kieran, I only wanted in the first three matches that we played in these first three windows, in each window, just one match, so we could get as much training as we could with the girls and be as well prepared as we could be for that actual match. Now it's going to be a new situation. That's why I just believe we need more training time with the girls than playing time in this February, March window, because, you know, all the information you're getting out of those games, you can't really put it into practice in training. You can't work on anything that you're going to get, you know, get out of it. So we're coming into a totally different situation. Two home matches within a few days of each other, and that's going to be a tough ask of the you know, the girls, their conditioning, their concentration levels. We have to focus again on the first match, which is Slovakia. That's going to be tough enough. Like I say, they are very, very close to us from their ability. So that's what we're looking forward to. And then, you know, yes, then we have two massive matches in June against, you know, for me, still one of the strongest nations around in women's football, Norway. And when they're all on fire, the girls, and I, you know, had my spell in Avaldsnes in Norway, and was able to work with some of the girls, Mara Mjelde, Elisa Torsens, for example. Great players, great girls, and it's a great footballing, women's footballing nation. So, you know, we've got a lot to look forward to. And then we actually finish the campaign with then the local derby against Northern Ireland, and hopefully then that we're still in the competition. So it's going to be a really, really interesting 2018 for us. But we're, you know, we're planning ahead. That's why I've brought in a lot of young players. If you see the squad that we had against Holland, this probably was the youngest squad that Republic of Ireland have ever put out. And we had a 16-year-old playing 90 minutes of football against the Dutch, which was fantastic. And we had a couple of 16, 17-year-olds on the bench. So we have got, this is going to be a learning, obviously a campaign that we want to learn as much as we can. We want to remain as competitive as we can. We want to become a force to be reckoned with. But we're also looking for the future and trying to get the young players involved now in that professional environment, in that pressure environment of getting results. So, like I say, there's a lot to look forward to in for the Republic of Ireland. And that's why I'm so pleased that I'm involved, and so proud that I have the chance, you know, to progress with this nation, because there's a lot, you know, a lot of work we want to do, and everybody's really motivated. And that those kind of results against Holland just underline that motivation that, you know, we can take things forward in this country. And hopefully within the next two or three years, we can be a really strong nation in women's football.
Well, I wish you well. Fascinating insight. I know that we haven't even had a chance to speak about the under-17s because you're taking them as well. And yeah, I probably should touch on that very, very briefly. You mentioned their 16-year-old playing 90 minutes, 17-year-old in the squad as well. You're looking after the under-17s, aren't you? And I guess that's giving you a really good insight into the future of the Ireland team as well, because you know exactly what's coming through the system.
Yeah, I've been involved now. I've seen the under-15s. I've seen the under-16s, obviously now taking the under-17s. I had, in the last camp against Netherlands, two or three under-19 girls also in the squad. So we do have a lot of talent. We say we're in the process now of creating a system where these young girls can be developed at a higher quality, higher intensity, to really, you know, get the best out of them. And we had in every camp, I think it looks like we're getting younger, but it's not just because they're young, it's because they're good. That's why they're in. That's why Tyler Toland, who played against the Netherlands, played from the beginning until the end of the game. She played the whole match, and she only turned 16 in August. But Tyler's ready. It's not because she's 16 and I just want to put a young kid in. No, she's good enough to play. And that's what we're looking for. And we have quite a few young girls coming through that are very, very talented. And even when we go to Portugal in January, I'm taking two 15-year-olds with me that are playing for me in the under-17s at the moment. So, again, two really good prospects. And I'm getting them in every week in these home-based sessions. So they're also getting that experience of competing in training against the older players. For example, training with or against Karen Duggan, Anya O'Gorman, those kind of players that are playing in the Women's National League in Ireland. So that's a great opportunity for them. So, you know, we're looking at, to improve. And yes, we have a difficult draw with the under-17s in the next elite phase. We have to come to my, my home, which is Germany. And in our group, we have Iceland, Azerbaijan, and then the home nation, Germany, who are actual European champions. So, again, a tough draw for the girls. But it's going to be a great learning curve for us. And maybe just to round it off, Kieran, the expectations that we qualify for the World Cup with the women's national team are very, very low indeed, because we have a group of Norway and Holland, like two top nations. But the hopes that we can do something, they are much higher. And that's what we're trying to build off. And it's the same, you know, similar situation now with the under-17s. The chances are to get to the actual Euros are very, very limited because you're playing against the European champions. But it's still not impossible. And it's this mindset and this belief that I'm just trying to change. With me having so many years in Germany, with that kind of mindset, Germans are always focused and we can beat everybody and we can win, and they're always there or thereabouts, and that's not a fluke, that's a mentality, that's a discipline. And it's these kind of things also that I'm trying to instill into the Irish, with their passion, with their drive, and their being really, really proud to be Irish. So I'm just trying to gel all these aspects together. But you need intelligence on the pitch. You need to be able to use the ball well. So that's what we're looking for. We can instill that footballing element into these young kids, that we want to play football. We want to play out from the back. We want to keep possession, that they get used to that. So that's why it's such an exciting time at the moment in the Republic of Ireland. We do have a lot of really talented young players coming through, and we just need a bit of time.
Yeah, and I'm sure that the FAI will give you that, and with the backing of the players, I'm sure that's going to be something that they're going to be keen to endorse as well. Colin, it's been fascinating insight. Really great to hear how the first 10 months have gone, the draw against the Netherlands, how the team is shaping up, the youth system there. I had a lot of your time, but I really appreciate it, because it's been really, really great to kind of hear that transition from club football into international football. Really wish you well for 2018, and let's get you back on maybe sometime next year after those Norway games.
Thanks very much, Kieran. You take care.